Blog Talk Radio.
Monday listening audience, and welcome to the Conscious Capitalist Show. I'm your host, King, and we have a great show planned for you today. I'm hoping that everybody is still safe and sound in their homes and practicing the CDC required social distancing guidelines. So I'd like to begin this show by stating what I'm grateful for today, my moment of gratitude. With that being said, I'm grateful for my life, for my health. I'm grateful for my strength today, my ability to see, hear, walk, talk, stand, breathe, and have a sound mind. I'm also grateful for another 24 hours, another opportunity to pursue my purpose in life. I'm grateful for the love and support from all my friends and family members. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to be able to do another show for you all today. So with that being said, again, welcome to the Conscious Capitalist Show on this Monday. We have another young entrepreneur that we're going to be interviewing, another woman from Baltimore City that has shown her heroism side as well. And I want to read to you all her bio. So we want to welcome to the show Nkenja Yassin. Nkenja is the founder and child development specialist of Learning How, Inc. She brings more than 17 years of diverse experience in child care. Her passion for connecting with students, families, and staff has allowed her to excel in training as well as family engagement. Compassionate and mission-driven guidance balances two of Nkenja's primary goals, which are to help those around her reach their highest potential, providing direction along the way, while she advocates for higher quality early childhood education. Based on her experience, Nkenja believes in a conduit for sustainable change when it occurs in conjunction with family support. Nkenja received her associate's degree in special education and later pursued her psychology bachelor's of science from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, where she used to increase understanding and communication with the people she interacts with daily. In the last 2 years, she has tremendous opportunities interning in Baltimore City schools, which has inspired her to write children's books for students who dislike reading. So without any further ado, allow me to welcome to the Conscious Capitalist Show, Ms. Nkenja Yassin. How you doing, Nkenja?
I'm great. Thank you.
How's this day going for you so far? Or has it gone for you, I should say?
It's going great. It's going great. It's been a wonderful day. Every day that I wake up is a great day.
Excellent. Excellent. So as we get things started, again, welcome to the Conscious Capitalist Show. My first question I wanted to ask you is, Nkenja, your name, it's a very unique name. Took some time for me to get the pronunciation correct. And so what does Nkenja mean?
Oh, thanks, King. Nkenja means brilliant. My father made sure that we had all very unique, meaningful names. So my first name is Nkenja, which means brilliant. My middle name is Olabisi, which means beautiful. And then my last name is Yassin, which means O perfect leader. So he made it, gave us a decision early on for us to have things to live up to.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. You know, we had your mom, as you know, on the show here last week, you know, so we got a chance to hear the definition of her beautiful name as well. So
absolutely.
How was growing up as a young black woman in Baltimore? How was it growing up as a young black woman in Baltimore?
So I think growing up in Baltimore, everybody had their reality is their reality. And as a child, you really don't know what it's like growing up, because you can only compare it to your neighbors or, you know, the people that are within your environment. So for me, growing up, I would say from birth to about 10, it was amazing. You don't really start to see the difference, or you don't really get to see, you don't start viewing life differently until you start, I think, getting to middle school and you have different family dynamics that, like losing people in your family, you know, it doesn't change for you until something happens. So it was a wonderful, it was wonderful growing up in Baltimore City, I guess. But when you look back in hindsight, you can see some of the opportunities you may not been afforded or things that, of that nature. But all of those things are the course to your journey. So it was great growing up in Baltimore. It's what made me the woman I am today.
Well, that's a perfect segue to my next question, which is, who do you look for inspiration?
Well, I look to a lot of people right now for inspiration. However, my father and my siblings, they played a really intricate role in my development. So they, you know, they always found a reason to make you stretch and reach for, they had really high expectations. I know, especially my father before I lost him. And so I would say they were my inspiration then. Now I would say I have a host of mentors that don't even know that they're my mentors, people that I admire a whole lot. More recently now, 50 Cent has been added to that edition as I read his Hustle Smarter, Hustle Harder book, or maybe the other way around, Hustle Harder, Hustle Smarter. But I have a lot of different things that inspire me or books that inspire me now. And, of course, my different mentors. I have a coach that helps me. So I have a lot of different people that inspire me at this point in my life.
Now, this is a question I asked several folks who I've had on my show that's from Baltimore City. And it's an important question, because what I want to do is I want to make sure that we point out that it is possible to be successful growing up in Baltimore City, a city that's been known for its racism, its marginalization, and its oppression, which has led to the conditions that we see now, the poverty, the violence, the drugs, and the murders. So with that being said, what would you say was your ability to avoid that in your life and navigate on to become a successful businesswoman?
That's a great question, King. But I wish I could say I avoided it. I wasn't afforded the opportunity to avoid it. I think I've overcome a lot of different things, but I don't think I got a chance to avoid certain things. And I think a lot of people may not be totally transparent, but in my own transparency, I will say I was put out of my high school for fighting. It's not a lot of things that I could say I'm proud of, but again, they are part of my journey. So they weren't things that I avoided. I will say that I think having a really strong family unit, having someone that I could always depend on, having someone that I could always call, having a support system allows you an opportunity to get through things but not avoid all things.
Interesting. You know, it's kind of like your mom pointed out that you don't get over something, as far as particularly the death of your child, you get through it. So I can kind of see how her teaching and her way of thinking influence has impacted your life in those areas as well.
Absolutely. I think we have this, like, I guess I call it a hierarchy of harm. So I think when you've experienced things on a really extreme level, then the things below that, you know, they kind of, you know, they're just an obstacle that you just have to overcome. You don't, you know, they don't stop you. And so I think that's one of the, we call it a Yassine thing, because we've watched other people, and I'm not saying this like, you know, to to say that anybody else isn't as strong or anything like that, but we pride ourselves on being able to keep it moving because we realize that that's a really important component to life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, as you know, everybody knows, we're going through this pandemic right now, and this pandemic has led to a lot of people being depressed because they can't leave the house. They're forced to the kind of the same routines every day of just getting up, standing in their pajamas. Some people don't even, you know, take baths because they feel they're not going anywhere, they're interacting with anybody. And that brings me to the question of, as a business leader, what do you do on a daily basis? You have certain rituals that you do to keep you focused and help you stay at your best during this pandemic.
Yes, King. So I've had several rituals even prior to the pandemic, and they have not changed. So every morning I get up, the first thing I say when I open my eyes is thank you, because I realize it's a huge blessing to be able to wake up every morning. And so the first thing that comes out of my mouth in the morning as soon as I open my eyes is thank you. And before I do anything else, I always find something motivational, or it could be a Joel Osteen. Right now it's 50 Cent. It could be a Joyce Myers, Deepak Chopra, so many people I can. It's a whole running list of whatever I'm in the mood for that morning. And then, believe it or not, some of the things that I just can't get out of my system from the neighborhoods I grew up in, I really love hip-hop. So following my spiritual regimen, I'll listen to something hip-hop. And sometimes I'll meditate in the morning, depending on how much time I have. But I always listen to something spiritual and some type of motivational hip-hop. And so I refer to that as my armoring up for the day. So I feel like if I feed myself something really good in the morning and then I listen to something really good, then I'll be ready for whatever the day has to bring me.
Now, use the term armoring up for the day. And do you feel that you need to put on armor in order to deal with the challenges that the day is going to bring you?
So I think it's going to determine how I deal with them. It's been days that it's been a really long time that I forgot to armor up in the morning, but I could see the difference in my day, how I reacted to situations, how I dealt with maybe employees. I need that in the morning. That's the equivalent to anybody's regimen of washing their face and taking a shower for me. I have to have that in the morning.
Understood. And maybe that has been a catalyst for what goes into my next question, because you've been in business for over 17 years. And as they say in business school, that most businesses don't get beyond their first 5 years in particular, because the fact is, you know, the first 2 years you're learning, you're growing, no matter how much you think you may know about your particular expertise. But business is a difference than just being somebody who has a skill set. You got to be able to manage people, manage payroll, manage customer service, you know, so all those things. And so that's why a typical business, small business in particular, does not last that 5-year period. Definitely, you know, so to get beyond 5 years and 7 years, all the way up to 17 years is quite an accomplishment. So what would you say has been your secret to success along this pathway?
Absolutely. So I would say that my secret, and I just to add to your question, I would say that you never stop learning in business. You're always going to be learning something new. Every time you think you got it all answered, there's going to be something else that's going to show you that, you know, that there's a new some new fad or something that's coming through to show you that you don't know everything. So I think it's an ongoing learning process, and I'm always doing my own personal development and my own professional development. But I think, and even in the process, this has been like on-the-job training. Entrepreneurship for me has been on-the-job training all for many years. However, I will say the thing that has been consistent the whole time has been my passion and my desire and commitment to my clients. So I think my success, even although there's been times that I wasn't quite sure if my spreadsheet was making sense, I didn't know if my margins were great, I didn't know if I was process, you know, mixing my personal finances with my business finances. So there were several things that I didn't know, but I knew how to treat my clients well. I knew how to develop children. So I think being authentic has been my secret to my success. There's no shadow, without a shadow of a doubt, people know that their children are going to be safe. They're going to be nurtured. They're going to be loved. And if there's any way I can help them with anything, that I will. And I've shown that. That's been reflective in my practice forever. And so I think my secret to my success has been being authentic to what it is that I do.
And I understand and can respect that. And in that spirit, what would you say you are most proud of in your career?
I am most proud of having children now that are either going off to college, in college, and they still remember me. So if you think back to any of your teachers, and I ask this question, I've done my own informal research, just asking people, what teachers do you remember? And people remember the people that were good to them, or either were really mean to them. So I remember the teacher that was really, really stern, and I remember the teacher that was really, really nice to me or helped me in some kind of way. All of the other ones in between, I can't even tell you their names. But the other ones, I can tell you the specific grade. And so when I see my students that I cared for 17 years ago and they still remember my name, they're still eager to hug me, that's what I'm most proud of, because I can see the results of the change that I've made in someone's life.
Hmm. Now, Learning How is a very interesting name for a child development center. It's actually a good name for a child development center. Why did you choose that name? Is there a story behind that, where Learning How came up as the perfect name?
So I think it's a great name. And Learning How has been my process on this journey, and it's been a way of rebranding myself. So originally the Child Development Center was Busy Bees. So when I originally started Child Development, it was just off of sheer passion, loving to work with children. But as I got into it, I realized there were so many more parts to children than it was, than on the surface of just having them in a great environment and, you know, and babysitting them. And so I decided to go back to school and get my degree in early childhood education. And there was where I found that there was so much more to children than just a babysitting service. And so Learning How is just what it says. It's teaching we're all in this process of learning how, our teachers, our children, our families. We're all learning how together, and so Learning How just spoke to me of how we would move this forward as we grow.
Okay, understandable. And so with that being said, one of the things that, particularly coming from our community, there's a lot of daycare providers, folks who have signs. As I drive through Baltimore City, I see, you know, signs, daycare, you know, child here, you know, first daycare, whatever the names may be. And now you're using the term child development, learning how child development. So I'm curious to hear from you, what do you see as your difference between daycare and then child development?
Great. That's a great question. And the name daycare and child development can be used interchangeably sometimes, and there's really no big difference in the definition. However, child development for me is a high quality program. And so that means that you've thought through all of the different components of child development. So how much light needs to be in your facility? Are the teachers credentialed? Is the program accredited? There are many variables to child development. For me, that is again, we refer to our center sometimes as daycare, but essentially the difference in Learning How is that we are a high-quality academic program that has – we have rigorous curriculum and quality teachers in our program, which is, and if you have quality teachers, you have a quality program.
Absolutely, absolutely. And with that being said, you know, if you're going to deal with child development in the context you defined it as, then I think that who you choose as your target population is extremely important. And who is your target population that you've chosen to work with? And then why have you chosen that particular population to focus your child development strategies and methodologies on?
So I would say working parents and then low to moderate income parents. And the reason we choose that target population is because we found that they are the ones that need the most support. So they have desires and dreams and of what they want for their children, but they have trouble actually obtaining those things. And so we chose that population because we feel like we would be great advocates for that population, helping them, connecting them to resources. And even things like when you think of the communities specifically, I know that our next location we're looking into is Cherry Hill. 45% of the population of those children under six have lead paint poisoning. And that's up over 100 children from last year. I don't think people are moving into that area knowing that they're running the risk of their children being, you know, coming in contact with lead paint. And so I think learning how is positioning themselves and has positioned themselves so that we can go in and we can find out all of those things ahead of time, and then we can advocate for those individuals. And to that point, we are in the process of setting up something with Ceasefire for this coming August so that we can do a lead paint awareness in that area. Because, again, I don't think that people are moving to our area knowing that if I decide to get pregnant, that my child may run the chance of getting lead paint. And even and furthermore, I don't think that I lost my train of thought. So I don't think that people are going to move to those areas knowing that they're running that risk. And so I just think people that population is our target market because we want to support them better. We want to be able to teach them how to advocate for themselves and where to find information.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And now, what do you see as one of the most difficult challenges that you have faced in your life?
Oh, wow. The most challenging thing I would say that happened in my life was losing my little brother. I lost my little brother in 2005. And he was my best friend. And so I would say the most challenging thing would have been losing my brother. And on the other side of that, I would say it would also be the fuel that continues to inspire me every day to be able to change those dynamics for children moving forward.
And have you found that dealing with challenges has been helpful based upon the foundation that was laid to you by your mom and the rituals and things that you show as far as your gratitude moment? Have they been instrumental in helping you overcome those challenges?
Absolutely, absolutely.
What would you say is one of the most fondest memories that you have of running your Learning How Child Development Center?
Oh, yeah, great. That's a great one. I'm working on a pitch right now, and that's funny that you mentioned that because I am that's one of the stories that I tell in my pitch. My fondest memory is of a little boy named Daniel who came to us. He was about 5 years old, and he came to us through a substance abuse referral program, and one of the stipulations for that program was that Daniel had to – his mom had to complete her 18-month program. And she did, and she really loved Daniel, really cared for her son, and she really wanted to do what was best for him. And so, but she was unable to maintain her sobriety. So Daniel was given back to his grandparents. He was awarded to his grandparents permanently. And so we helped with his development. We assisted his grandparents with one of our partners that helped them to understand what we call, it's called an IEP, it's an individual education plan. And so they were able to help facilitate that meeting so that the grandparents would be able to understand what an IEP is, what it's going to look like, how we could best support them. And so together we all helped support Daniel through his process. And so today Daniel has recently become a Baltimore police officer. So that is one of my most fondest memories of learning how.
Okay. What have you chosen? Why have you chosen one of your primary goals to help those around you reach their highest potential and providing direction along the way? Why have you chosen that as one of your primary goals in life or with learning how?
So, everybody doesn't like when I say this because, you know, it's blasphemy to use biblical terms, but I look at myself as like the sacrificial lamb. So I think that helping others reach their highest potential for me is, I think when you are exposed to certain environments, there's a bar on how far you can go. So you have this limitation in your mind before you even really get started. And so I think taking that limit off allows people to be able to see what they're capable of. And I think sometimes just a little support in allowing people to see what they can do really is what allows people to flourish. So I think just assisting people to see and exposing them to something different or pushing them just a little bit positions people in a way that they will always be able to survive. They'll always be able to take care of themselves. And I think gaining that level of independence is the most rewarding it has been for me, to know that I'm capable of anything that I put my mind to. I think that mindset, that freedom in your mind, and although it may be challenging to accomplish some of the things that you may be setting out to do, but to know that it's possible, I think, is important for people to understand. And so that's really important to me because I think so many people are limited in what they can do just because they don't think that they can do it. And so pushing people along the way is just one of the things that I think in helping them reach their highest potential is important.
Absolutely. That's a great answer. And we definitely need individuals like yourself to be in our communities and definitely provide your spirit, your energy, and your passion to child development. I think that's important as we begin to really deal and delve with some of the social issues that we face here in this city, and not only Baltimore City, but in every city in America. Now, can you share with us a story about how working with one of the children has impacted you as a person over your 17 years?
Well, it's not one, but yeah, absolutely. There's several stories, but I don't think you're filled with this kind of energy every day and you're this excited to go to any place else every day unless, you know, I think childcare for me has been just a rewarding career. Like just being able to see the smiles on everybody's face every day. It's not like walking into an office. I can only imagine. I've been an entrepreneur most of my life, but I can't imagine walking into a bunch of adults every day. But children, it's always something new, always something. Even if they're sad about something, being able to change that. Like, so I just think it has been. We've been able to have children, 85% of our children prepared for kindergarten. We've been able to have parents go back to school. So I think the change that we've been making over this time is what is just the motivating force every day. So I can't just tell one story. There's several stories of how children have impacted our lives every day.
Okay, I understand that. And do you find yourself sometimes, and I know that, you know, maybe not, it may be not politically correct to say this publicly, but do you have certain children that you work with that you say you tend to favor more than others? And when I say favor, not necessarily treat better, but favor in a context that you look forward to their energy and their spirit differently because of maybe the bonding that you've been able to build with them?
I wouldn't say that the energy is any different. The energy is the same for all. However, I will say this, that when you have a child that comes into your care that has been in 36 foster homes and they share some of their stories with you, it's a little bit different, I'll say, than the child that has the two-parent household. Not saying that either one needs more or less attention, but it does hit you in your heart a little bit when, you know, when they share some of their stories with you. So it's not that you function any different, but you do want to turn up those supports so that they won't be another statistic. So if you think of a child that's been in 36 foster homes, how many schools has he been in? So he or she may be behind in reading. So there are different types of ways you would address the child that has the parent that is reading to them every night than you would address the child that that may need a little more assistance. We do this thing called reading impressions. We just started using it, but research has shown that it will help children that are two grade levels behind get on grade level within 6 months. And so we've been piloting that program and training our staff to work with those kind of individuals that come into our center. So they would require more time, there wouldn't be any difference in the type of care or the energy that we would give to any of the children.
Okay. Now, one of the biggest, I will say, ongoing debates that we have in the Black community is whether or not to physically discipline your children or spank, or as you like to say, coming up when I was young, whoop, you know. And now we never use the term beat, and I know that now the language has shifted to beating. Like, nobody wants to beat their children, you know, so you put that kind of verb on it, then of course it doesn't have a very exciting thing to do. But whooping and spanking and disciplining your children, which again was a way, a tool of the 60s, 70s, 80s. And I know I was disciplined that way by my mom, so was my brother and most of the folks who I grew up with. Now I'm a proponent of that, even though I don't have children, you know. And my brother, I know, who has four children, he's not a proponent of it. He doesn't believe in it. I believe in it because I looked at it this way. To this day, I still fear my mom. Not fear from a context that I know that she will whoop my butt or beat me in a fight, but fear and respect from her because of the fact is she instilled that in me at an early age, and it still carries on to now that I'm in my 50s. And so my question for you, as a woman who's a mother of three kids as well as in a child development business, how do you feel about disciplining your kids or disciplining kids in the Black community physically?
So first, King, I want to answer that question with a question first. My question to you is, you said that you fear your mom, you still fear your mom to this day. Did you get in trouble at all in school?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Constantly? So did you get a whooping for those things?
Yes.
Did it change what you did in school? If you said constantly, did you stop the behavior that you were doing to call for the beating?
I changed some of the behavior. I might not have done it the same way. And depending on the severity of the whooping, I may have changed that. Like, for example, and I'll give you an example. I skipped school, as they say, play hooky, when I was in kindergarten. And I got a
Wow, you
whooping.
Started early.
Yeah, it was a long story behind the reason I did that. It was something I had did that, and I was told that I should not go to school by older kids, and it wasn't the case. But that scared me from going to school, and I got a beating a whooping for that. And I didn't skip school again until I was much older. So I learned my lesson from that in that regards. But to your point, did a whooping ever stop me from doing something that I really wanted to do? No.
Right. And so then that answers my question. I mean, that really answers the question for me. I don't believe in physically harming children. I think historically we've been taught to deal with our children in a certain way, and I think it's remnants of slavery, oppression, that is why we still feel like it's okay. And that's one of the, I would say, back to one of your other questions, that is one of the most challenging parts of my job as well, is conveying that, changing the generational way of thinking with parents of how to discipline children, how to redirect them, how to put in a lot of different preventive measures to avoid certain behaviors. But it's I can send you a plenty of research that disciplining children in a physical way does not change the behavior. And so although you might feel like that you didn't hook school anymore because of the beating, it might have been because of you disappointing your mom at the time. You were at a very fragile age. Kindergarten is 6 years old, I mean 5 years old. So that's a very fragile age where making your parents proud is important to you. What respecting your elders is really important. You are in a whole different stage of development than you would have been if you were getting that same whip in, say, fourth grade. I don't think it would have changed if you were going to hook school anymore. It was just going to change how you hook school. If you were going to use the back door or the front door, the side door, you were just going to get really creative with it. So I think that, just like jail, I think that physical punishment just teaches children how to do something differently, how to do it better, just like prison. So prison teaches, you go to prison, you find out how to be a better prisoner for the next time. So, and I think that that is culturally, I think that comes from just like an oppressed mindset that parents feel like that that's the way that they have to reprimand children. And because those behaviors are taught, they're learned behaviors, our parents whipped us. I'd love to see what a generation of children that did not get whippings, what they would be like, what their self-esteem would be like, how far they would thrive without those parameters around their development.
Interesting. Now, you know, I will say this. Now, I did admit to the fact that the whippings didn't stop me from doing those behavior things that I felt that I was going to do as a inquisitive child, and having an older brother, and coming from a neighborhood where I had a lot of older young black men who definitely had an influence over my life, because most of the kids, I was pretty much one of the younger kids in my crew, so to speak. So they definitely had an influence and got us into a lot of trouble because of their influence. But what I will say that I believe that the whippings did do for me was they stopped me from doing some certain things that I feel that would have been very detrimental to me. Like, for example, I only stole once in my life, you know, and I never did that ever again. And I did it only that one time because I was with a friend of mine who did it. But I knew it was wrong, and it bothered me. For my conscience, it bothered me. Even though I did get caught and got reprimanded, but even when I did it, consciously it bothered me, and that's because my parents are still that enemy. So I'm just saying that to me, I think whippings may not change that the what I consider to be the small things that children are going to do. The child's not going to be perfect, but it helped me from going too far over the edge, like breaking in someone's house, stealing a car, selling drugs, and things of that nature. Those things I look at as the truly criminal activities, I believe that, in my personal opinion, that the respect that I had for my mom, the fear that I had for my mom and my father, contributed to helping me kind of stay away from those type of things. Now, I didn't fear them enough to the point where I wasn't going to do anything wrong, which I don't think any kid, whether you whip them or not, that's going to do that, because kids, human beings, are going to do what comes to their mind, you know, until they learn that lesson. So I just wanted to add that that perspective to it as well.
So I really hope that you will have me back on so I can have more data and research to talk more about that. Because I will say that I totally disagree with you. I respectfully totally disagree with you.
Okay.
And so I'd like to have, I'd like to cite some things and have more circumstantial evidence to show, to prove my point. So I'd like to expand on that at a later date.
Absolutely. We definitely have you back on. And if you can remember this, because, you know, I just want to throw this last little point. I had a friend of mine I grew up with who still a close friend of mine now, and he never got any spankings at all. And I would say he grew up differently, but we'll table that conversation into that time frame. But, you know, I definitely do respect your opinion on it and your perspective. And I definitely would like to really just have a show dedicated on that, you know, and bring on some other parents. Because I just believe that maybe that's one of the things that, again, this is just from my perspective. I'm not a father, so I can't really speak it from that perspective. I don't have children I raise. It's not my profession. So you definitely are involved with children a lot more than I am, on a lot more levels than I am. But I just think that as a Black community, I think that is something we should have a deeper discussion around. And then how do we go about doing that, you know? But in getting back into some of the things that I want to talk about today, now that shift from talking about disciplining children and whipping children to how do we go about inspiring children, and maybe more particularly inspiring you, and how do you feel about the important role that mentors play in your life, and then being a mentor in the lives of their children as well?
Oh, absolutely. So I think at any point in your life, you should be a mentor and a mentee. So I think at every level that you're trying to aspire to, I think you need to be to have a mentor. And then I think you also need to be a mentee to someone. I mean, you need to be a mentee, and you need to be a mentor. And so I think there's always someone that you can teach something, and I think that there's always something you could be taught. But in reference to inspiring children, I think it's simple. I think you have to not ignore anything that they feel like they can be. I think everything should be child initiated, because we all think different. We all we're different people, and so I think respecting everyone's individuality is important. So knowing that, letting children understand that they can be heard. I know historically this will go with your whippings, that children are to be seen and not heard. That I totally disagree with that as well. Children should be heard. They need to. It's the thing that cultivates their self-esteem, their self-worth, and will allow them to go in boardrooms, you know, knowing that they can do whatever it is that they need to do to get the job done. So I think inspiring children, always having a positive attitude, being a role model, showing them every day that you're human, but you will always be kind, you'll always be gentle. I think it's really important to have them in some type of servitude. Children need to know what it's like to take care of other people, other things. They need to garden, which is one of my favorite things to do. They need to learn how to take care of things. They need responsibility. And they need to be exposed to different things. They need to see that this is a big world, and they can have whatever piece of it that they like to have. And so bringing those kind of things to them, or taking them to those kinds of places. I know we here at Learning How, we're always doing museums. And right before COVID, we were invited to the Embassy of Botswana, which was going to be a really exciting opportunity for us. I mean, I don't know if my children were as excited as my parents were, because they were going to be able to go and visit an embassy with different ambassadors from different countries, but museums and different extracurricular activities, just exposing children and letting them know that they can be anything that they want to be, and making sure that you have adults that also believe that. So one of the things that I do here is I set goals. We set goals for not just the children, but also for the staff, because I don't think you can inspire children to go somewhere you don't even feel like you're capable of going. And so that's pretty much it in a nutshell. We make sure that everybody's growing, everybody's developing. And again, back to my reaching their highest potential, you know, somebody may want to be a doctor, someone may want to be a lawyer, another person may want to be an entrepreneur, but cultivating all of those things and giving them the opportunity to explore those things is one of the things that I think is a very intricate part into inspiring children.
That's a great answer, and I know you've answered part of my next question in that answer, but I just want to give you an opportunity to maybe expand more, so I'm going to ask this question anyway, and that is, how important is early childhood education and development in the development of raising children?
So that's a great question, and I think this is where, when you asked the question earlier today about the difference between daycare and child development. So I know I said that we use that word is used interchangeably, but I want you to understand that children spend the majority of time in school or child care. So if they're in care for 10 hours a day, by the time that they go home in the evening, it's time to go read a book, eat dinner, and go to bed. And so I think child development is a vital part of development for children. And I'm working now on making the correlation between there has been several studies about the difference in high-quality child care and non-high-quality child care. And it really, I think if you look at a high-quality program where children are learning so many words before they're age five, or they are doing hands-on project-based activities. If you test that child in 11th grade and you test the child that did not go to a high-quality child care, there's a huge difference not only in test scores but even in your everyday choices. And so I think child development is a vital component to one of the many challenges in Baltimore and cities alike. So I think child development is a core component to the challenges that we see and we face today.
So growing up as a Baltimorean, what do you think are some of the key solutions that could be implemented to help improve this city?
So King, one of the reasons that I found Conscious Roundtable to be a really interesting and interesting organization and movement is that they were focused on the economics of Baltimore. So I think we do a great job of collaborating with ideas. I think we do a great job of collaborating with coming together for a cause. I think we do a great job of getting upset when something happens. I don't think we do a really great job in Baltimore City of collaborating on the economics of Baltimore City. And so I have started being more involved in programs that advocate for the economic position of individuals. So when I think of squeegee boys, when I think of homelessness, when I think of programs that support those kind of things in a way that don't give people the actual resources, or they give them the resources but they're temporary. I often reference the phrase, give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day. Teach him how to fish and he'll he'll fish, he'll be able to eat forever or something like that. But I think that that concept is what I would like to see happen in Baltimore. I would like people to be more involved in teaching Baltimore how to fish instead of giving them a fish, teaching them in some kind of way. And I don't know how that would be done exactly, but I think that when people are in a position to be able to take care of themselves, it instills a pride. It instills so many different components that will allow them to really develop. And so I think the economics is one of the pieces in Baltimore City that could be improved.
Okay. Well, we're getting to the top of the hour, and basically we're getting two more quick questions that I have for you. Maybe not necessarily maybe require quick answers. So that's why I want to make sure I put out our time limit. But one of the questions, I'm sure that we can probably build on it on another session, on another show. What are some of your plans for expanding Learning How?
So we are in the process. We will be opening our second location very soon. We plan to open in September. We're building out in three different phases. So we're going to open our second location in September. We'll open our third location next year. And then our third phase is a licensing model. So we're working on a licensing model to be able to position current family providers to be able to own their own centers as well with our Learning How methodology. So we're piloting several different programs and using our research-based curriculum and implementations and putting those to work now. And then we'll have the perfect program that should be implemented in every center across Baltimore City. So our third phase will be that licensing model.
Okay. Now, what is one thing that you can start your career over today with the current level of knowledge that you have and experience? What would you change?
What would I change? I would have empowered more people to be in the position that I'm in today. So I would have expanded Learning How to change child development across Baltimore City and the cities alike a long time ago. So this scaling model. And growing model would have been implemented 10 years ago, and that would have positioned other entrepreneurs like myself that are interested and passionate about child development to grow and be as successful as I have been in my career.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so what advice would you give aspiring young ladies who are interested in opening up a daycare or a child development center? What advice would you give them, and what resources can you refer them to help them get some information about getting started in that particular career path?
Absolutely. So the Baltimore Child Care, Maryland State Department of Education and Child Care does a orientation that will give you all of the resources and information that you need to get started. I've written a book, an e-book called Start Your Own Child Care. That's available it will be available this coming Friday. And then the other thing that I would tell them is to face all your fears. I feel like I've started facing my fears really, really late. And so if I could tell them, or the young me, I would say to face all of your fears, because you'll realize after facing them that it was not as serious as you thought it was. So anything that you're afraid of, I would say to go and do, position yourself in that space, and make friends with people that don't look like you. And that's pretty much it.
Okay, now when you said you've written a book, can you tell us a little bit about what this book's about, what's the subject of the book, and You said it would be available. Where would be some of the places that folks need access to it as well? Please share that.
That's a great question, and I'm learning how to plug myself in better, King, so I thank you for that assistance. So you will be able to find it on Amazon. It's just an e-book to get you started, and then it'll give you all of the basics on how to get started in child development. And so one of the things that I wanted to be very specific in that in this book is that if this is a business where you're just getting in it to make money, it's not the business for you. This is a business for changing lives. So I'm willing to help and consult on the process of child development, how to get started from beginning to end, but it's not going to be a way that you can cut any corners. It's not a retail business. I owned a boutique years ago, and I know that you can put things on sale when business is slowing up. You can hire anybody to sit in the store as long as you have cameras and you take inventory. This is not that type of business. So I wanted to make the point of that although it can be a great career, it's very rewarding financially. It's allowed me to purchase properties over the year. It's allowed me to do a lot of the things that I've really wanted to do. It's allowed me to take care of nieces, nephews, and serve and do just a little bit of philanthropy, just on a really small level. But any philanthropy is great philanthropy. But it'll be available on Amazon and on my website, which is www.learninghowmd.com.
Okay, well, speaking of your website, which you just shared with us, is there any other contact information that you want to share with our listening audience, or any closing thoughts that you want to share with our listening audience as well?
Absolutely. So we are currently doing a reading share. It was initiated because the children were not able to have their literacy during the day. So it's we are looking for volunteers to read a book. It'll only take about 5 minutes of your time to read a book to our little ones. I can record you at any time, or one of our staff members could record you at any time. It could be done from the comfort of your living room. So any childhood book that you may have, or we could even send you a book. So any childhood book that you enjoyed, we are looking for people to read to our children while they are not able to be in our care currently. So if anyone is interested in volunteering to read to our little ones, we could be reached at 410-435-1161, or you could schedule it any time on our website on the landing page. As soon as you open it up, there's a small box in the bottom that says schedule now. You can schedule there any time that's convenient for you at www.learninghowmd.com.
Okay, and thank you, ma'am, for your investment of energy and time and passion for today's show. I'm sure our listening audience definitely appreciate the answers that you gave and the spirit in which you brought those answers out. Definitely going to help us think about child development differently, as you talked about the difference between daycare and child development, since we choose to use those as synonyms in our community. But I think that child development is one of the key aspects of raising or transforming a city. And that's, of course, the Conscious Roundtable's goals, is to bring economic revitalization to Baltimore City through real estate and business development. And as we buy blocks of properties and change neighborhoods, then, of course, helping businesses like Learning How, and as a core anchor to be able to provide that kind of learning and growth within the community, I think it's very important. And lastly, I want to just offer our contact information for folks who want to learn more about the show and where to get information about Conscious Capitalism. I'm sorry, the Conscious Roundtable and how we're implementing Conscious Capitalism. That is, go to the Conscious Roundtable's website, which is ConsciousRT for Roundtable. So it's ConsciousRT.com, and you can find information about where the shows are. We're going to also have a website for the Conscious Capitalist Show. You can listen to an archive of our shows. And then, of course, we're going to be providing access to education classes, online training for folks who want to learn more about business and want to learn more about how to be a conscious investor and a conscious developer. And then lastly, I want to close with, I want everybody to think about one thing you can do today to be of service to others. Even though this day may be over, think about it from a context of knowing what the answer is for implementing it tomorrow. And if everybody does that, I think you will have a much better day and you will make someone else's day better as well. So with that being said, I wish everybody a blessed and productive day. And I want everyone to go forth and let's continue to all strive to be more conscious. Thank you, and Kenja, for joining our show today.
Thank you for having me, King.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Me too.